Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Every Tuesday, public discussions of anything and everything pertaining to the penal system, prisoners, victims, causes, mental illnesses, addictions, symptoms, effects, outcome, changes, anything everyone would like to discuss pertaining to criminal justice reform around mass incarceration. This is an opportunity for everyone having something to say to voice their opinion, provide feedback, brainstorm for ways to improve the current issues of abuses and deprivations, psychological healing. Excuse me, I have a bad cold. I've had it for the last few weeks. Please join us to provide your feedback as everyone's voice matters. I want to also explain some things. I am a social worker, and I do assessments. I follow people. I look at their body language. I listen to their words. I listen to what's going on in their lives. When someone tells me about someone that comes on the show who is an enemy of theirs, another advocate, they expect me to judge right away and side with them. And I'm not about that. I am not a follower. I am a leader. And anyone that is a follower should not be an advocate. Because when we're out here in the field, when we're out here in the virtual meetings, when we're doing anything pertaining to anything that we are disgusted with, the injustices that are going on, we need to advocate. We need to network, but we need to network with people who are like-minded and not about themselves. And what we have had sometimes is people that have come on my show when they had their own to try to tell me how to run my own show. And I feel really bad because it's people that you trust sometimes that turn out to be the ones that you need to really watch for. So I'm going to do my show today, and I'd like to have all of you, anyone that has something to say, to come on and talk about the issues. I'm not the type of person that's going to have problems with my fellow advocates. And if they decide that they have a problem because I or someone else is not thinking the same way they're thinking or siding with them, that's their problem. I'm not going to change my life, my way of thinking, my goals, my agenda for someone else. If I can respect what they're doing, they should definitely respect what I'm doing. But because of someone's opinion a few weeks back, or maybe a month or so ago, because of someone's opinion, they were dissatisfied and stated that I opened the door, opened the way for spies to come on their show. How? Because I didn't side with them on an enemy that they have. Two people have a problem, they need to work it out. They don't need to get other people involved. Because we have mass incarceration in this country. And most of it is because people are trying to sway other people to think the same way they think. A lot of people are incarcerated because of what others have said. Lawyers are out there denying privilege to prisoners because the lawyers friends with another lawyer or other lawyers that have something against a certain prisoner because that lawyer has some connections with the victim's family. They're not being a man. They're being cowards, standing together, finding ways to conspire against people. This is something that I despise because that's not showing leadership, what they're doing. That's showing how much of a coward they are. That's showing how they do things just to keep up with their peers. They're so insecure that they're afraid to lose their peers if they disagree with what their peers are doing. I am a leader. I'm not a coward. And I'm not like these people that feel they have to side with somebody, that they don't even, the problems are not even their concern for them to feel they have to side with someone to keep hold on their peers. And there are people I uplift a lot. When I see they have some intelligence, I try to build them up. Sometimes it goes to their head, and they think that they know it all. So we need to look at some of these issues, too. We're going in, or we are in the year 2022. This is a year I say is going to be victorious for all of the forgotten ones behind those prison walls. If we're going to be advocating for the incarcerated men, women, and youth, then we need to start acting like adults, serious about what we're doing. And yes, there's a racial issue in this country that needs to be addressed. But those who are racist and hateful, those who are racist and hateful and trying to do the damage to people of color, they're the ones that have to answer to a higher power. All we can do is respect ourselves, respect our people, our young ones especially. And when these young kids are listening, because there's a lot of young advocates out there today, when they're listening to garbage on a radio show and language that's used by somebody that's supposed to be honorable, that's not showing any kind of role model. And I want the public to hear this, because our young people throughout this country have gone astray only because they don't have the role models that were once out there. The people that claim so much injustice, that's acting just like those that they are talking about. We should be watching our language when we advocate. We should be watching our language when we're on radio shows. We should be respecting ourselves, because that's what we're about, respect. We want respect, we got to give it. And unfortunately, a lot of people want the respect, but they're just as disrespectful as the people they claim. When someone disrespects me, then there's a problem, because I lose trust in that person. I don't want nothing to do with that person, and that person's out as far as I'm concerned. And I have to bring that up because that's a big issue. Next week, we're going to be talking about corrupt lawyers throughout this country. If any of you listening to this radio show have ever had any experiences, negative experiences with lawyers, lawyers who have scammed you, lawyers who have abused you, lawyers who have worked both sides, worked, are claiming to work for you and working for the Department of Corrections or with the Department of Corrections around the country as well. We have some corrupt lawyers, and there's going to be discussion about that next week. So anyone that wants to join in next week to talk about some of these issues, please do. We're going to start exposing corrupt lawyers as well. We need to start looking at the things that are going on in this country, because sometimes you can't even trust advocates. Everybody has their own agenda, which is good, because if you're going to have your own agenda, stick to your agenda on your territory. If you come on to my territory, then stick to my agenda. And if you don't want to do that, then go your separate way, but don't bring it up that I am a problem because of that. I don't ask anyone to come on my show, and I don't ask anyone to listen to it. What I do try to do with my fellow advocates is try to share whatever information I can. I do a lot of research. I try to share what I find from the researchers so I can help my fellow advocates in whatever way possible. When my fellow advocates say they're going to help me, I'm still waiting to see if it happens. So I'd like to have you call in if you have any questions, if you want to give feedback, if you want to vent, whatever you want to do, call in and let's get this thing going. Because we have a lot of information we need to get out to people that have no clue what's going on with the injustices in this country. And the penal system is at the top. We have people behind those prison walls that are going through a lot because we have a corrupt system, a corrupt government that does everything they can to make it seem like they're doing something positive when they're doing absolutely nothing. Politicians that go in and meet with the prisoner around the time that they're running for election or something, and then you don't see them after that. Another thing I'd like to talk about is friends. When you have people that you grow up with that talk about how close they are, this one's like a brother to me. You're like a mother to me. And that's another coward. That's another coward. Now a politician. A different story. So 2022 is going to be a year for me to bring up a lot of stuff that I've been holding back on. There's a lot of things that need to be exposed in this country. And other countries are looking at the United States of America as a farce, because that's just what this country is. Look at, they talk, senior, the Social Security retirement, they talked about it's going to be the biggest increase in history. People in 2022, this year, this month, are going to get such a raise in their Social Security check. It's going to be the highest in history. And what was it? Like $40 or $60? And look at the prices in food. Look at how the prices in gas and everything else has gone up. So they think by bragging about a $60 raise being the highest in history, it's supposed to be some big deal. This is coming from a government that brings home $140,000 a year, if not more. They talk about raising the minimum wage. Big deal. They went from, what was it, 14 to 14 something, 14. This is garbage. People are living in a country that's so full of shit. And that's the last time I'll use that word. We're living in a country that really, really is so dysfunctional, so disgusting. And yet, they want other countries to believe that they know it all. Here's another one, a country, the United States, knows it all because they got a little power that even China has overtaken so far. I admire China. I admire China because China, there's no, you look at even Russia, they don't like the United States and they don't hide it. They don't hide it. These are countries that are coming up in the world. There's a lot of other. There's no such thing as a third world country anymore. But this one's heading that way. The United States of America is heading towards becoming a third world country. All because of its pride. I don't know if any of you know about Nebuchadnezzar in the Bible. But Nebuchadnezzar was one of these kings that thought he had done everything on his own. All the power, all the riches, all came from him. Like, I'm King Tut, you know, I did all this on my own. But he was warned by God not to do it. And one morning he woke up and stretched his arms out and he started bragging about what he achieved. And the next thing you know, you found he was found out in the wilderness with all the animals. His claws, his fingers had turned to claws. These are things that people don't realize. But there is a God. There is a highest power. And our Most High is going to be running and ruling, is going to be making positive changes, but at the same time, there's going to be a lot of disaster coming, which we've already seen a lot of it. It's been predicted in the Bible about all the earthquakes and tornadoes and hurricanes and fires and floods. It's already been prophesied. It's already been prophesied in the book of 2 Timothy chapter 3. It's already been prophesied about the hearts of many that grow cold, the pride that people have, the betrayals, the lust. All these things are in the Bible. Look at 2 Timothy chapter 3:16. It talks about all scripture is inspired of God and is beneficial for all, for reproving, for disciplining, for setting things straight. In the book of Matthew, chapter 24, it talks about all these things. People need to get it together because in Revelation, and we are in the revelations right now of this, of history, of what's going to come. This country's in big trouble. Not only the country, but the world. People need to start changing. They need to start looking at the problems that are going on. And they don't, maybe cannot change the problems that we're faced with, but we can change ourselves. We can start thinking differently. We can start networking and staying loyal to one another. and not trying to think that we know it all, as some do. People talk about the problems, but they never come on the show to talk about it. They talk about it to one another, to others. They never come face to face. They never talk about all these things. They never talk about how we can work together to resolve it. We've talked about the overload in the prisons, the abuses, targeting. Some people right now in situations they don't even belong in. But do we have our political leaders checking into these situations? No, because if somebody's on a restrictive block or in solitary confinement, they automatically assume, this is our government, knowing that there's a problem with the penal system, automatically assuming that person must have done something wrong to be in that situation, which is BS. There's too much of this going on, too many people being targeted, too many suicides going on around the country in these prisons, because they're forced with no other alternative, with no hope, put in situations where they cannot tolerate any longer. Yet our political leaders, again, seem to think they did something wrong because they're put in these positions. I don't even know why we have politicians. I don't know why we have people in power throughout the country. Look at the Democrats, they can't even come together. Manchkins and what's the other one, Sinema? What are they even doing in that party? And they have a problem with raising taxes for the wealthy? You know, it's a farce. It's a joke. But they say the government is the people. And if the people are doing nothing about it, how do we make changes? We don't. I know I've been advocating for the incarcerated for 25 years now. I started my organization in 2004. We were doing national, advocating for the incarcerated men, women, and youth. I was even helping some with resumes, writing letters on their behalf to get free clothing from the department stores or the thrift shops, giving them the letters when they came out, giving them their resume, letting them get some free clothes presentable so they could go job hunting. All these organizations that say they don't have the manpower and they don't have the money or the resources is full of it, because I've never asked for funding for my organization. I recruited volunteers from the universities around the country. I recruited law students who were looking to do their internships, criminal justice students, psychology majors, social work. There's so much. And I've told not only others, I've told Prison Illegal Services when they complain about not having enough manpower, I told them about it. They're a nonprofit. They're a 501c3. I'm a 501c4, which gives us political power, some leeway to work with politicians. A 501c3 has not that power, but at the same time, we see it happening with some of these 501c3 legal service organizations. How they get away with it, I don't know. But there's no reason for any organization to talk about not having the funding or the resources. ACLU is another one. American Civil Liberties Union. Not one time have I ever contacted them or had someone else contact them about abuses going on in the prison where they did not help. Not once did they ever help. And I'm going to bring up those three, Joe Kappa, Joe Holquin, Clifford Finney in Pennsylvania, 2007, committed suicide after begging for help because they were being severely abused and kept in the hole. I contacted ACLU back then. After each one died, I contacted them before the next one died. And the next one died, and I contacted them before the third one died. They did nothing. They could care less. And it's not just in Pennsylvania. It's in Massachusetts as well and around the country. Why get funding if you're not going to do the work? And if you don't have the manpower, then put it on your website that you're temporarily unable to to take any new cases. Any organization, any law firm, any legal organization that says they don't have manpower, they don't have the funding, put it on your website so people can see that you're going to do nothing. Put it on your website so people won't waste their time trying to get help from you. If I stop talking right now, you're going to hear just nothing, absolutely nothing. Listen. That's why this country is in such a bad shape. That's why this country is so dysfunctional. It's so, so dysfunctional. It's like you'll go back to your neighbor or your friend or somebody you know, and you'll be talking about these issues. You'll be talking about what you heard on the station. You'll be talking about how you're disgusted with the penal system, how you're disgusted with the abuses going on, how you're disgusted with all these things. Yeah, tell your neighbor. Tell your friend. Let them know how much of an advocate you are by remaining silent. You can hear a pin drop. And the news. You listen to the news, you're going to hear news from last year still talked about. You look at other countries, especially like in the Middle East, even in Africa. You see all these people that have suffered so, so much in their countries because we have gone into their countries without even a reason, because there's no way those countries could have harmed us. We're clear across the pond. And all these things that have been happening throughout the years, we've been going into their territory, their loved ones, their children, their parents, destroyed completely. And then we wonder in this country why we're hated so much. What gives us the right to go in somebody else's country and shoot up their children and shoot up their fathers and mothers? But when it's on the news, you hear about it maybe one day. Here you hear about news that don't even make sense. You're hearing about it 3, 4, 5, 6 years from now, going all the way back to Marathon. When does the past get hidden and everybody look for the future? When does everyone stop complaining about something that happened years ago and start looking at ways that we can improve things today? And every time this country has ever gone into another country for wars, they've always brought back something from those countries. Their gold, their diamonds, their oil, their bronze, their aluminum, their copper, their brass. Every single time. That should tell us something about why we're going in invading someone else's territory. It's everything that was taken from other countries that built this country. This was the last continent that came up. The last continent that came up. How could it have been the most powerful if it didn't take from all these other countries? I have to laugh. I have to really laugh at the people of this country. You have an opportunity to speak up. And I can hear your voices loud and clear. It's pitiful. It is so, so pitiful. We've been interviewing people from other countries who have talked about the differences, the comparison between their countries and the United States. And I say United States because that's what this country is about. It's not America. What is America? This country is a United States. It's a united representatives from all over the world representing their countries. And yet they try to do away with the United because of the racism, and they want it to be one, America. Where did the word America even come from? I don't even know. I don't even know. But as I was saying, people from other countries talk about the comparisons between the United States and other countries, where their other countries have no such thing as mass incarceration. Other countries do not have the hatred and racism that we have in this country, a country that is united, a country that has representatives from everywhere in the world, and yet we're the ones with the racist problems. When this country consists of Asians, African Americans, Hispanics, Native Indians, it doesn't make sense. This country consists of all these things. And we have a problem, too, with racism. Because of the racism in this country, we have a lot of different cultures that are trying so hard to identify with the white, the Caucasians, because they feel like if they do that, they're not going to be among the oppressed. They feel if they're going to side with the whites, if they're going to act like they're white, then they're going to... I remember years ago, there was a young man who joined the skinheads, and they disrupted all the Jewish cemetery in Massachusetts. It turned out that this young man had color in him. He was trying to identify with the whites because he was so discouraged about his own race. And they didn't even know the difference because he looked white, but they didn't know he had black in him. And I'm sure that's the way it is with a lot of people out there, and even white supremacy. I think if they look back somewhere in history, they're going to find some of their own clan, some of their own people have African-American blood in them or have some other color in them. People don't know anymore because a lot of people of color, they don't look like they're of color. I know so many people that have African blood or Hispanic blood or Indian blood in them, and here they are looking like they're pure white. And then you look at the Italians, Sicily. They have black Italians, Italians of color from Sicily, the Arabs in the Middle East. You find the white Arabs, and then you see there's a population of Arabs with color. And when you think about the Jewish population, they don't talk about that part unless they're trying to get money. But the Jewish population from biblical times are in Ethiopia. And those Jews, some of them are as black as the Ace of Spades, but these are Jewish people, right from biblical times. And then you have the Jews in Israel. You have the Jews of color and you have the white Jews. I know one person in the jury, in a trial, they were asking the person what the person looked like that fired this one shot years and years ago. He said he was black. So the lawyer said, was he light-skinned, dark-skinned, middle, you know, beige? And this is a Jewish person. He said, black to me is black. He was black. This is a white Jewish person. That goes to show you how ignorant even the Jewish people are. They're supposed to be among the oppressed, yet he wanted to say he was black. Black to me is black. That's ignorance. That's a culture that's trying to identify with the very people that have been oppressing them too. But what it is there's so many multiracial backgrounds now, mixed marriages, that people want to identify with whomever it is they're with. So I look at it this way. If the Jews want to identify with whites, then let them identify, but they can't have it both ways. There's no such thing as having anything both ways, no matter what the culture. You can't talk about the whites 1 minute and be a part of it and talk about the hatred you have for being oppressed by the very people that you're trying to show the respect for. I respect those who respect me. I don't care what race you are. But once you disrespect me, then that's the end of it. I don't need that kind of disrespect. And I identify of color. I will always identify of color. And I don't need to pretend I'm something I'm not just to fit in. So all of the races out there, the cultures out there, it's on you. You have the ability to speak out, to say what's on your mind, to say what you need to say, to make positive changes, or sit back and just let the government rule you. Do whatever they want. Give you a few pennies here and there and call it a major raise in history, the biggest in history ever, $60. And look at the food prices and the gas and everything else, electric bills, everything's gone sky high. And they think their little bit of $40 or $60 raises are going to do something really major. So as everybody sleeps, I am going to be shutting this down early today because we don't need to waste time on a show that everybody is afraid to speak up or speak out on. And I myself always have something more important to do than stay quiet, more important to do than stay quiet. I've spent my life as a social worker. I've worked for almost every home health agency around the state. I did per diem. I worked for doctors. I did private duty. I did some self-publishing on books. You know, been on the radio show. I try to do a lot of different things because I don't want to waste my time doing nothing. I don't want to waste my time complaining about something if I haven't tried, at least tried, to make a positive change. And there's too many people that need us, too many people out there that need our help. I started a petition. I'm going to bring this up again. I started a petition almost a year ago to do away with prisons, to replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities. And that's exactly the name of the petition, replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities. It didn't quite make 600. Now, my question is, and this goes to show you how dull, how ignorant people are. We have all these mothers on Facebook, all these wives, all these girlfriends, everybody that wants so desperately for their loved ones to be released from prison. And yet, they have an opportunity to sign a petition to do away with prisons and replace it with long-term residential treatment facilities. A lot of these people have loved ones serving life sentences and life without. So you would think that they would want to see them in a long-term residential treatment facility where they would be treated for whatever the problem is, but they would be out. They wouldn't have to be in for life or life without parole. They could be out in 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 25 years maximum. But yet they don't do anything. There's even been mothers on Facebook that said they're glad their sons are in prison because they're not doing the drugs. Hello? Where are the drugs coming from? Go on the internet and type in guards caught smuggling drugs into the prison. It's all over the place. We had a pandemic. There were no visits for almost 2 years. There was no, all visits were suspended. But yet there's prisoners inside that were getting high. Where are the drugs coming from? So for you mothers and wives that say that you're glad your loved ones are inside because they're not doing drugs, I bet you're getting all kinds of letters, requests from your loved ones asking for $50, $75, $100 a month. When you start paying out a lot of money for your loved ones, you know the money's going somewhere because there are people in prison that don't get any money whatsoever. And they're surviving. You know why? Because when they get put in prison, they become the custody of the Department of Corrections, who is supposed to provide for them. But because many of you are supporting your loved ones with all this money, they have made it impossible for anybody to afford a lot of these things that they're charging for. They're charging for almost everything, haircuts, medical, all these other things, because some of you out there of sending all kinds of money to your loved ones. Because if you don't, they're going to get mad at you. If you don't send to your loved ones, they're going to get so upset with you, they're not going to want to talk to you. So here comes a little bit of money out of your low income or out of your pocketbook or out of your whatever. Send as much as I can just so that I won't make enemies with my loved one. That's a joke. That's a joke. Who's controlling who? I can understand why a lot of people are incarcerated. I can understand why. There's a lot of families out there that have nothing to do with their loved ones. If they don't have anything to do with them now, were they there to support them before they went to prison? A lot of people are in prison because they didn't get that support when they were hurting. They didn't get that support when they were addicted and needed the help. And the courts, I have a real problem with the courts. Because these judges, when somebody goes to the courts and says, my loved one needs help, I need that person court-ordered into a residential treatment facility for depression or for substance or for whatever. And the judge, and this happened years ago, on Cape Cod, there was a woman that tried to get help for her son in Mashpee on the Cape because he was involved with drugs. And the judge ended up putting him in jail. What does that do when you see something like that and you say you have a loved one you want to try to get help for because that person is depressed? You're going to be afraid to go and get help from the courts because the courts are doing the wrong thing. We have corrupt judges as well as corrupt lawyers. Corrupt judges. Because all they want to do, no matter which way you turn, is to fill those prisons up so that they can get all this money. Prisons for profit. So they take these things into consideration. Let's just get them in the prison. They don't care. They're like cattle. People today with this government are like cattle. Just throw them in prison. I remember years ago when they started closing down all these mental institutions. They started shutting them down like wildfire. And a lot of those people that were in those mental institutions ended up on the streets. And many of them still on the streets. After all these years, many of them stayed on the streets. And the ones that didn't end up on the streets or the ones that are no longer on the streets are in prison. And look at all of them that have been on the streets and then shot down, shot up, and killed by people that were supposed to look up to for help. Why is it they get away with it because they have a uniform or a title? They get away with it because they have a uniform or a title. Another dysfunctional ideology from the people of this country. They can't distinguish between criminals and criminals. They can't distinguish between a person in uniform and the person in uniform as a criminal. So it's okay if you got a uniform. So how many, have all of you people, have any of you thought about it? Let's all get into law enforcement. Let's all get jobs working for the DOC. If you want to get away with anything, that's what you want to do, is get a job working for the DOC or working for the law enforcement. If you want to get away with it. And that's what a lot of people have done. You get a lot of these young people who have joined the DOC or have joined law enforcement. For what? To get away with something. So let's have 204-248.
Hello, this is Steph.
Hi, Steph. How you doing?
I'm doing. How are you doing?
Good. Have you been listening?
In the last few minutes, I couldn't start at the beginning. I was just stretching off my work and doing my lunch. Got your message and saying, oh, yeah, showtime. So,
yeah, you know what?
So I'm listening in now.
I was just talking about the great need for people now, the great goal of people now is to join law enforcement and to join join the Department of Corrections because they can get away with things that other people can't get away with. You know, we have people in uniform and with titles that can do anything they want to do with anybody and get away with it. And I'm saying this is sad, but this is the way people are thinking now. If you want to get away with the crime, become a police officer or become a correctional officer. You know, it's sick, but this is our country. This is how this country thinks. It's sad to say it.
And can even worse for a prosecutor who has absolute immunity, virtually above the law.
Yeah, these prosecutors, that's true too. And that's why they tamper with evidence. That's why there's so much corruption in the courts. I don't know. But Steph, while we have you on the phone, on the show, why don't you talk a little bit about your book again, where it can be found and what the name of the book is?
Yeah, the book is called You Need This. And the subtitle is Introducing Onychology, the Study of Need. And the book actually addresses a lot of the issues you're talking about because part of the book actually uses the criminal judicial system as an example of why we have to have a better way to understand our affected needs. Part of this also has to do with power. And like you're talking about how corruption goes through the system, those with the, you know, credit's been long known from 1800s, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Of course, there's even more nuance to that.
You know that.
And so the book can be found at my website, valuerelating.com. Valuerelating.com.
Valuerelating.com.
Yes. And there's a green button right on the home page that anyone can click. It goes right to my Amazon page. And I don't like having to work with Amazon. It's not a company I like or enjoy, but it is the best opportunity for a new author like me to make it, you know, to break out with a self-published book.
Oh, that's a good start. That's a good start. You know, when writing, self-publishing or whatever, when you first start out, you get better as you go along, and as you get better, then you have more options of how to publish. I was told years ago, printing, if you go through a printing company, it's even better because the funds, everything goes to you. It doesn't go to the publishing company. But I don't know with Amazon, I understand they don't charge to do the publishing. So that's
exactly it's much more affordable. You know?
Yeah.
But underneath Amazon, Facebook, all of this has the undercurrent of neoliberalism. I know Miriam has talked at length some of this too. But it's infected the criminal judicial system because in the last 20 years or so, it is the whole idea that's infected the public sector that you should try more and more of what works in the business sector. By the way, I can speak on this because I have a master's degree in public administration, so I actually had coursework on this and came face-to-face with it. But it's the idea that you can use private sector principles and practices to help incentivize the public sector to be more efficient. Now, there are some areas where that could be, you know, could actually create an improvement. But privatizing prison is going too far because prisons is actually what economists would call a public good. But you try to make that a private good, and now we have a system where, let's say, local law enforcement are incentivized to find crime where it's not really existing. You know, the old saying that a hammer, it looks at everything as if it's a nail. And so neoliberalism has infected the criminal judicial system to where they're now having to figure out how to make sure the money keeps flowing, even if crime levels drop. Unfortunately, since the pandemic has lapsed, some of this crime rate is kind of on the rise. But for the longest time, crime was actually down. But the prison population was still going up. It's just not really make sense. And criminologists and other experts had long explained that the crime rate has not a direct correlation with incarceration rates. It doesn't work as a deterrent, as the popular narrative goes. It's not like a person, someone who commits a crime says, oh, maybe I shouldn't do this, because if I do, I might get 5 to 10 years. They're not thinking of that at all. They're desperately trying to relieve some pain or trying to work through some trauma. And then the consequences of some law enforcement is like one of the last things on their mind. So it's not like incarceration creates a deterrent. It may in some areas. There might be some exceptions. But for overall, like you said, it actually has to be addressed at a more treatment level, not in some way to like, we're just going to punish everyone who acts bad, according to what we say is bad. But we're not going to punish someone who like takes down the whole economy like they did in 2008. It's quite a double standard, don't you think?
That's the truth. I don't know. There's just, to me, it's there's so much inconsistency in the way things are done in this country. And people need to speak out. People need to come out and talk about these issues. Look at you. You're coming out. You're talking about it. You're writing books on the needs of people. And these are things that I can't believe. And I've traveled 11 third world countries. I cannot believe the lack of motivation in this country. I just can't. I don't understand it. It's almost like people are just walking around like zombies complaining about things and not doing anything about it.
So I also addressed this in the book. So let me tell you about a construct that I invented called sim functionality. Now, we all have heard of dysfunctional. Things get dysfunctional when they don't work the way they should. Then we're, but what do you think, I mean, is there anything that is in between sickness and wellness? Because if you look at the medical establishment, you know, because I'm a counselor too, so it's the whole idea is like someone's well, now they're sick. Well, something happened in between. So I came up with a construct called SIM functionality, SYMFUNCTIONALITY. SIM functionality. SIM has the prefix like symptom, which means with. And so basically the idea of SIM functionality is that we no longer function to our top optimal potential. We no longer are so optimally alive. This is peak functionality, which is what Abraham Maslow and other humanist psychologists have written a lot about, being able to live to their full potentiality. Csikszentmihalyi was also one who was a pioneer in this. But most of us are finding ourselves pulled into, not according to what are optimally the best, but what we're under pressure from social institutions like law enforcement to like, well, we're not going to live up to our full potential because we don't want to make a risk that could get us arrested, to get us or find out we'll offend someone in position of power that we have to pay more than we're already paying. So we settle for something less. And so we all, so instead of living to our full potential, we start getting by less, less, and less. Until some of us have gotten by with so much for so little for how we can get scraped by that we get sucked down into dysfunctionality. So I do think a lot of why you can observe how Americans on average don't seem to be like, you know, politically activists like the young kids in the 1960s is probably because of all this immense social pressure. With the whole backing of technology helping the, you know, the government use like big tech to suppress dissent, to suppress our full potential. So I do think there's a way to address it. And, you know, when we get time, I'd like to actually share more about a whole other way of applying what I wrote about in the book. I'm actually starting to put together material that will end up being in the fourth book, because I already wrote the next two books. So I'll basically have to work on those over the summer. Spring and summer and get those out, but hopefully I can introduce you and I want to introduce Miriam to a whole new concept of what I call, well, she already has up the word psychosocial therapy. I already started using that too, but I'm using it also for what a concept I'm calling advocacy campaign, which allows people to be able to speak truth to power in a way that lowers the risk of retribution. Because I think that's mostly why we're being sucked into some functionality, is because we are hesitant to speak truth to power because we realize with technology and all the other resources that governments have and these people in power they have, we probably don't, as we are acting as individuals, we take a big risk. There was a service that could take out that risk by bringing people together and say, no, you're not going to have any retribution on that person without the world knowing. So I'm putting together a service that does something like that. And I'm still piecing it together, and I look forward to sharing it with you and Miriam and anyone else who's interested in speaking truth to power.
See, that's what I'm talking about when people get involved You're doing it, and so there's ways that so many people can get involved in so many ways. And you have been doing it through the books. You've been doing it through your speaking, you know, all the things that you're doing. Can you imagine with 2.3 million people in prison, and if all the relatives and all the friends and all the advocates were to do what you're doing, can you imagine the progress we'd be making? I mean, it's unbelievable. We could be doing so much. But everybody thinks because someone else is doing something, let them do it. They don't have to do it because we know that other people are working on these issues. But that's the worst thing people can do is assume that it's going to get done because other people are working on it. They say success
right.
in numbers. Success in numbers.
And that's also one of the downsides of modernity, that in modern times we have all these wonderful conveniences, all this great sources of entertainment and pleasure that it lulls us into sleep, when realizing a meaningful life is not from entertainment or from finding things that are pleasurable and enjoyable, but a meaningful life is in the service of others.
Exactly.
In fact, Miriam just had a post on Facebook saying that pretty much in more lovely terms than I just did. But basically, to find meaning in life, to find joy, to find like satisfaction is not what I can do for myself, but what I can do for others. So hopefully this service can be like that, to help people find more meaning in their lives by speaking truth to power. And what is really dynamic about this service is it doesn't shame power. It looks at power as those who say they're in power, but if you are really in power, take that power and resolve our needs. Oh, you can't resolve our needs? Then that power isn't really power. It's just coercive force. And if you can't use it to result in positive goods, positively resolving needs, then maybe you should lose that power. In fact, that's called the Matthew Principle. Called the Matthew Principle because it's in the Gospel of Matthew, basically of Jesus' words when he said, those who have little will be taken from them. And those who don't, I can't remember word for word, but basically it's like if you're not really using your resources to do good for others, then what you resources you have will be taken from you.
Exactly.
Perhaps given to someone who can make some good of it.
Exactly.
And that's what I say to power. So the service actually speaks and challenges power to say, if you are in leadership position, you are in position of authority, we're going to hold you accountable to positively have impacts on people's lives where they need it the most. And if you can't respond to those needs, then perhaps your credentials for leadership are going to be challenged and maybe even ultimately removed. Make room for someone who can rise up and make these changes. Make room for another Dr. King. Make room for another Gandhi. Make room for anyone who can now have the moral courage to speak truth to power and make things happen. And there are some who are doing that. I mean, like Chris Hedges, who goes into a prison and teaches the guys things. Like, and he's, you know, he's a renowned writer. You know, why does he have going there? So, he's a noble example. There are others, too.
A lot of others. A lot of others. I just, you know, like I say, there's opportunities for people to do something, to be positive, to do something with their resources. And like you say, if they can't use what little they have, then they're not being productive, nothing like that. I don't know, but it's getting to the point now where I'm just getting discouraged and disgusted with the way things are going in this country, because people just don't care. They just don't. They complain, but they don't care about making changes. They don't care about getting involved. And, you know, I could see, Steph, if it was before the pandemic when we had to go out, we had to do these things, you know, physically. But now everything is virtual. You know, everything is done by phones and by telephones and by computers and by emails and by snail mail. And, you know, nobody has to leave their house to do anything. Make phone calls to the politicians, the legislative members. You know, do something right from their home. But this country's lazy. They're so used to having things done for them. I don't know. I wasn't going to, actually, even with the show today, I wasn't going to do it because I've been going through this flu all week. You know, I don't know if it's a flu or the pandemic, but I was supposed to go for testing yesterday. I went to go for testing, and the line was like 3 miles long. I couldn't believe it. They don't even know how to manage this whole thing. It goes to show you that they don't do anything structural. They don't do anything. They're almost like experimenting. They're experimenting with these different techniques on how to deal with this pandemic. If everybody would just stay in like they recommended in the very beginning, if everyone stayed in for 100 days or didn't go to work, didn't go to school. But no one in this country likes to be told what to do. So because they were told not to do certain things, they fought it and they decided they were going to do it anyway. So they put everybody in harm's way. And now look at the country is spreading like wildfire with the pandemic. But, you know, there's too much going on in this country. And we've got to look at how to resolve all these issues. But when you have a population of people in this country that doesn't want to do anything, that's sad. That is really sad. You would think that they were the ignorant that are in third world, what used to be third world countries. But now, like I say, those countries are coming up to us. The only ones that are dysfunctional now are the ones that once were at the top. Now we're looked at as a joke. Yeah, it's just so much.
And so with each challenge that pops up, I'm also trying to look at it from the perspective of opportunity. That sure has helped me get through my life. Many challenges, what's the opportunity? What are the needs behind it that need to be addressed? So that's also what I'm trying to do with this advocacy campaign, is to actually look at it. What keeps people motivated or demotivated from improving their own lives? What can be done to help them, and what can we do to help them, empower them to help themselves? Because that's the best help they can get, is to be able to free them up to be able to do best for themselves. So yes, I'm looking forward to being able to polish out this campaign, put together, and to see if it works. Now, here's the point. So when I put together this campaign, this advocacy campaign, the first client, the first guinea pig to try this is me. I want to use it to challenge the wrongful conviction I endured way back in 1993. And this, the problem that's not keeping me homeless, where I have to sleep each night under shelter, only because the mistakes the state has made, the power has made, so-called power, back in 1993, and that the Innocence Project movement still can't get on top of, because there are so many who are wrongly convicted that the Innocence movement has lacked the capacity to keep up with each one. Now, I've already put together something that could actually help them speed it up, but I haven't had much of a good, favorable response from them. In fact, I've even put together a Facebook group for it. That's how I first met you. And so that's a swarm I had created called the Estimated Innocence Swarm. So I want to be able to put together a service. The first campaign of the advocacy campaign is to see what kind of support I can get from power to see if there is an alternative, a more quicker, efficient, faster way to estimate that how many people who really are innocent, who really need this attention, so they can go out and find greater resources. Now, here in Michigan, I'm from Michigan, and my case is now supposed to be reviewed by the Innocence Project here in Michigan. I'm still waiting for them to contact me. But they got recently a $300,000 grant so they can have the funds so they can do what's called forensic processing. Of course, most of that's DNA, but forensic processing can mean other forms of evidence that could determine guilt or innocence or culpability. And so they asked for the $300,000 grant, but I already know that the number who are actually innocent, who are wrongly convicted, who need their cases reviewed, $300,000 is a drop in the bucket. So what if I came up with this EIF, this Estimated Innocence Form, was able to get it out there, found out there's like 20,000, 30,000, 100,000 in state of Michigan alone who needs their case reviewed, and then we can choose that to go out to where the resources are for the $300,000 grant, say, oh, we're going to need like maybe $2 million. Well, maybe we can make that $5 million and we hire more people and train more people to do DNA processing and keep up with the demand. Or say, well, until you can admit this is a problem, why are we giving so much control to prosecutors to keep making these mistakes? And there's a challenge, the very legitimacy of that. So this is my thought. So this will be, I'll be the first client of this kind of program. And then I want to work out the bugs. But I'm reaching out to you, Liana, and also want to reach out to Miriam, and perhaps you can help me piece this together and keep me shaping this. And then the second campaign, this was my vision, the second campaign to try this out will be with you, with your vision for a treatment over incarceration program. And that way we can see if we can speak truth to power and get people not only to have power to listen, but to get people involved and say, yeah, I want to be a part of that, and have them give incentives, give them reasons to be a part of that. For one, we'll protect them from retribution, but two, also to say, maybe this will be good on your resume. This will be good for your career. This will be good for you to find good leadership roles in certain nonprofits. But cutting to the short of it, it's basically to empower us to speak truth to power and to do it in such a way that power would want to respond to us, because if they were honest, they're honest to themselves, they realize they're not helping too many problems become solved. They need us. They need us to help them, and we need them and the resources to help us solve these problems and stop making these problems worse. And we can do that through the power of love.
Amen. And I'll tell you, that's one of the things that I think, you know what they should actually do is start these pilot programs, pilot projects. You know, we have a new mayor in Massachusetts. She's Asian. And they cleaned up the street. They got in certain areas, they've gotten these people that were homeless that were sleeping out in the street. They took all their things. They ended up putting up these small, they're like small facilities where these people can be in there protected from the cold and everything. And they're starting these programs for, you know, addictions and everything else while they're in these little facilities. But you know what, if they took and started all these pilot projects, even like the one you're going through or the ones that you'll be doing with the Innocence Project, you know, that's what they need to start doing, is trying projects like that and seeing how they work. And if it's successful, start expanding on them. Start expanding on them. Start letting these people out into these projects and see how it works. I have a thing about... in other countries where they have such successes in their penal system, in their prisons, to even start a pilot project with a lot of these people in prisons in this country, to maybe somehow send some of them over to other countries and, you know, different countries, to see how it works with them being over there, to see how they're successful over there. Because I know if it can work for the people that are already over there, it can work for our prisoners. The people need to start looking at different options to try to figure out ways that they can, you know, make some positive changes in this country with the prisoners. Now, this thing with the Innocence Project, is this been something that's already started, or is it something that you're actually looking at negotiating or whatever with them?
Well, the Innocence Project got going about 1989, 1990s. So I don't know if you're familiar with the Innocence Project, but it's just head by a couple of lawyers out of New York.
I believe Barry Scheck started it years ago. But out of that, also came the Cardoza Project. And I think the Cardoza Project started with the Innocence Project, too. Now they're separate.
Well, basically what happened is over the years, they were able to expand their reach by having Innocence Project pop up in each state, or at least in major cities of each state, and so that they take on cases that are within that state. Then about 6 years ago, 7 years ago, Houston came up with the first conviction integrity unit. All other places, they call it conviction review unit, but basically it's prosecutors who are saying, you know, we're tired of being embarrassed by this nonprofit movement saying that we made all these mistakes and getting into court. Why don't we look for the mistakes ourselves? And of course, this has been a controversial issue because, you know, like I said, a nail looks at everything and sees it. A hammer looks at everything and sees it as a nail. So how well can a institution that makes mistakes be able to recognize its mistakes and correct them? And so there's a record of a lot of the newer conviction integrities that have popped, conviction integrity units that have popped up that have a lower rate of fighting, creating exonerations than the nonprofit organizations do. So it does speak to whether or not are they under-resourced? Is there resistance from the actual prosecutors or attorney generals of that state to prevent it? At least here in Michigan, we have a Democrat attorney general who issued who put together a statewide conviction integrity unit so that it has more, a chance to get reviewed. And my case was in there last year, but about a month ago, I got a letter from them saying that they had forwarded my case to the West Michigan Cooley Law Project, which is an innocent project near here. And they said I should hear from them soon about the form to fill out about my case. And I filled out like four of these forms. Nothing's ever happened to me yet. I'm still waiting for them to do something. But I'm now going to say I'm not going to wait for them to do something. I'm going to do something. I'm putting together an advocacy campaign, and I'm going to be in a race to them. Either you find the money to and test the DNA case all those years ago, before the DNA degrades, and to be able to find out that, yes, I am not – there was no even crime happened. They can either do that in timeliness, or I will then speak to them and question their legitimacy. Oh, and my next book also opens shares the whole story. So it's like I'm in a race for time because they all say the wheel of justice spins slow, and the arc of justice leads long. Well, there are many guys who are getting out of prison, finally getting exonerated, and then die really after because there's so many years have gone by. Like the guy in Michigan who was wrongly incarcerated for 48 years. Where is people's conscience about, hey, why don't we court this error early on, especially we have the means to do so? So what is – how can someone say they're in positions of power and not use that power to correct injustices? So that's what I'm trying to do with this advocacy campaign, is to hold such power accountable to the reality of impacted needs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think yours could be a good follow-up because mine is – focus more on the narrow population of the wrongly convicted, and even more narrow, those who are actually convicted. So there's a distinction made among those who work in the innocence movement. You can say wrongly convicted. I know there's this guy in a guy in Michigan. He's been in prison for 48 years. He says he's wrongly convicted because years ago he had helped some friend of his rob someplace, and his friend went in and killed the clerk. But he got nailed for the homicide of his clerk. So he had no knowledge of this guy was going to do such a thing. He was just robbing the place. So he was saying he's wrongly convicted. Now, under some definitions of wrongly convicted, you could say, yeah, that's wrongful conviction, but that's not absolute innocence because he was admitting to being involved in a crime. I'm saying, like myself and others, we weren't involved in any crime. There was no, in fact, in my case, there was no crime at all. It didn't even occur. And I've never had any felonies before or after. So it's more of a narrow population. But I know after doing time in prison, I need not slip into that self-righteous attitude like because I had no criminology, I'm somehow better than others. Not at all. There are those who are in criminology because, as you pointed out, that's all they can figure out how to do in a moment of overwhelming trauma to survive whatever it is they did. Sure, it was against the law. But what about the law making sure that they were in a situation, they were so desperate enough that they had to harm someone or to do some damage in order to address their desperate needs? So that's where I see myself like first trying out this program on the narrow population of the wrongly convicted and then expand it later for your concern, your cause, for those who should not be in prison but be in treatment centers. And as you pointed out, during the deinstitutionalization that began in the 60s, 70s, throughout the 80s, where people were getting treatment in facilities where they put out on the streets, and because they did not have the internal capacity to maintain a very productive, lawful lifestyle, they would end up being picked up and they did certain petty crimes. Sometimes they didn't do any crime at all, but they were pushed into it. And so they were exploited, and they were being taken into police custody and then incarcerated. So, our biggest, well, say 50 years ago, our biggest systems were dealing with the severely mentally ill were asylums. The biggest institution for dealing with that same population is, jails and prisons, And most wardens, I've actually seen wardens that say that. I used to be a manager of, the average lawless person, but now I realize I'm actually in charge of basically an insane asylum. I have to deal with all kinds of issues, mental health issues, and I don't have the people who are qualified to handle it. Why not? So maybe the society needs to reprioritize themselves to face the problem, right? Because you can't really fix a problem until you admit you have it. So that's I face that problem, and then start looking at ways to address it. And I think your petition and your proposal is going to help nudge that discussion and maybe even come up with some programs that we can pilot and say, okay, let's pilot this program. Let's see what happens if we take a certain, let's say, a certain segment of population out of Massachusetts, put them in a pilot program where, sure, they should be doing 10 to 15 years for this crime. But instead, we're going to put them in this treatment program, and we're going to compare the outcomes and impacts with others who are in a similar situation but still in prison. And then we can take a look at what's the proper thing that we should be doing as a society.
Exactly. That sounds like it would be the most appropriate way to handle it, too. These pilot programs, I really think that the pilot programs would be awesome to start working on different pilot programs for every situation. You know, the pilot programs wrongfully convicted, the pilot programs for the first-time offenders, those who were victims before becoming offenders, those who are serving life and life without parole, those who are serving 5 years, 10 years, different programs, different projects to see how they go. And whether they use these pilot programs in this country or other countries, I don't know, but I just think that something needs to be done because this is stale. No, there's no, you don't see any progress in anything that's going on other than they keep throwing them in prison, you know, and the prisons are just so maxed out. And the monies that are being used to house these prisoners is not being used accordingly. It's not being used for the purpose that they should be using it for. And prisoners are not getting the good food that people think they're getting. That food, that good food is going to the staff. The poor food is going to these prisoners. You know, anything to fatten them up to make it look like they're eating healthy, but it's not that at all. I don't know. And the legislative members need to be more involved. They need to start going into the prisons unannounced. They need to start overseeing because no one's overseeing any of the prisons across the country.
So. Yeah, I remember seeing a documentary years ago about a judge who showed up in a prison or whatever. I can't remember what he was doing there. But he came out of that experience realizing that no one should really sentence someone to prison until they've first been there.
Mm-mm. It's sad. Too many people have been. You know, I was reached out to by a newspaper to do an interview with them on some of the issues that are going on in the prisons in Massachusetts. I never responded. I'm still considering, though. I never responded, but I'm thinking about it because it needs to be addressed, and these are things that should be discussed as well. But we have a caller, 918. Do you want to state your name, please? Let me just unmute you. Okay, 918.
Yeah, I just got on, so I don't even know what the topic is.
What is your name?
This is Rachel.
Oh, hi, Rachel. How are you?
I'm doing good.
We were just talking about the issues that are going on in the penal system and also some pilot projects that they should put in place with these incarcerated individuals. And Steph was talking also about her book and some of the things that she's been working on. But these are things that we want to bring out, too. So if you want to say something, please do. Also, we have...
Yeah, and Leona was just saying that she was invited to speak to a newspaper. I was going to add that I would say, yeah, go with it, but go ahead and bring along your own recording. Make sure you have it fully documented so that in case they ever misquote you or take things out of context, you can take your recordings to more sympathetic media like Prison Legal News and make sure that they're kept accountable, too.
Well, you know, I'm going to be starting the shows to start bringing out a lot of things that are going on, and it's going to be the treatment of the incarcerated, too. But 217, do you want to state your name, please? No?
I'm sorry, ma'am. Yes. My name is Joshua.
What is it? I'm sorry.
Joshua.
Joshua? Did you
want to
say something, Josh?
Yes, ma'am. I have a little bit of a problem, and I appreciate all of the Olympians from America boycotting what China is doing to the Tibetans, the Taiwanese, and the people of Hong Kong. I just wanted to say that's amazing. We already know what China does outside of their cities. There's like video evidence everywhere. So what they're doing to the Uyghurs in the northwestern desert area of their country is pretty much the same thing that the Nazis did to the Jews.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I'm not too familiar with it.
The Uyghurs in the northwestern region of China are Muslims. And because China is a communist state, they can't allow any religion, because religion teaches man that there is a power higher than the state. So what they have done to the Uyghurs in northwestern China, they've basically interned them and placed them into concentration camps. They've made the men and women infertile, and they've kidnapped the children and indoctrinated them with communism. That's not me saying that. I'm not on the ground over there, but that's people that have escaped that. They made it to Kazakhstan, they made it to Russia, and they made it to other countries. And they're coming out saying, yeah, I'm no longer able to have children because of what they did to me in that camp.
You know, we've got about 12 minutes left, but I'd like to pick up on this the next time we have a show, because those are some issues that really need to be brought out so we can get a better understanding about some of these countries, too, with China and some of the things that are going on. As I said, I wasn't familiar with all that, but it's something that should be, you know, discussed and disclosed as well.
Absolutely. It'll break your heart. There's a basketball player in the NBA called Enes Kanter who's been calling out China for the treatment of people in Tibet. Obviously, there are other places where worse things are happening. I just want that to be known. But there's a guy named Enes Kanter who started an entire campaign, even LeBron James, you know, trying to protect China. So there's a beef there. I just want people to understand that. Enes Kanter, that's my man.
You know, it's funny, you mentioned these athletes. I have a real problem with athletes and celebrities with all the money that they have, even the monies that are being sent to take. These celebrities that are going up to space and spending billions of dollars for a visit, an 11-minute trip or whatever. You know, there's so much going on around the world. And you would think that these people with all this power and all this money would be using it wisely and to address a lot of these issues that you're talking about, that we're talking about as well. And, you know, this is where inequality comes in with the use of money. I think we pay celebrities too much money. I think we pay the athletes too much money. I think they need to break things down. It's just like the Powerball. They have the Powerball, so one person is going to get, or two people are going to get a big, large amount, and other people are going to be losing out. But I think that we need to look at some of these politicians, some of these athletes, some of these celebrities, and start expecting more from them. I don't know how it could be done, but it should be.
Can I throw something on top of that?
Please.
The reason politicians are people that were too ugly to be actors. They still lie. They still manipulate. It's the same thing as an actor. So actors are people who are really, really good at lying. They can manipulate facial features. They can cry on a whim. It's no different than a politician, except for politicians tend to be ugly. And athletes are in that same realm because they're athletically talented. None of these people matter. None of these people will affect your day-to-day life. And that's exactly, I think they talked about this a lot in the Bible. They talked about false idols. Like,
uh-huh.
I actually got into a little bit of a spout the other day because I said LeBron James telling all these kids that because of the color of their skin that they're always going to be held down. I said that's terrible. Why would you do that to people? It's amazing. It's amazing how many people came back and said that I was just jealous of how much money you were. I don't. You know what? Me and LeBron James, me and Elon Musk, and me and everybody listening right now, when we die, you and I are going to take the exact same amount of money with us when we go, and that's absolutely nothing.
Nothing. That's it. Amen. You came into this world with nothing. We're going out with nothing. You know what? I just find that right now a lot of things. There's no such thing as not being able to make it with the media. I mean, with the internet. People, even incarcerated, they there's so many that do poetry, that have written books, and Steph, she just wrote a book. But there's so many people that have that gift. They have the skills, the talent. They can draw pictures. They can make cards. There was an incarcerated individual from Pennsylvania whose beautiful artwork sent me a card for Christmas and like a handkerchief one time with the drawings on it. But with the internet, with PayPal, with all of these things, people can actually start their own businesses online. Or they can start their own nonprofit organization to help in some way or another, to help others. There's so much that can be done. So there's no reason why anybody should be put down or held back or you know, oppressed or anything in those areas, because they can do their own thing now.
Well, I think the bigger problem that we're dealing with is people thinking that they're special. And I think in other people believing that the people that think that they're special are as special as they think they are. And, you know, that really destroys everything, because we look at these celebrities, all these basketball players, football players, you know, Denzel Washington, Keanu Reeves. Who cares what they're doing in their everyday life? It doesn't actually impact us. And I think if people actually brought it closer to home and actually tried, you know, it's difficult, and I'm not going to deny that, but it's difficult to impact your community in a positive way if people are pushing against you. But what I've learned, I've lived in several different states, I've learned that if you try to impact the local community, people are going to do nothing but pat you on the back and try to help you.
Hmm. You know, years ago, I'm going to bring Oprah Winfrey as an example. I remember watching her interviewed by Diane Sawyer or Barbara Walters years ago. She had started a school for girls in one of those African countries. And here she has these diamond earrings sparkling so bright you can be blinded watching her being interviewed. And so Diane Sawyer, I think it was, said, "Well, Oprah, what do you want to say to the people?" She said, "Well, I'm no Mother Teresa." She said, "But I'm just saying they can all something do." Well, you know something, I traveled 11 third world countries, and the money that Oprah Winfrey probably put out for the girls' school probably would have been something that you or I probably could have afforded to do, because it doesn't take a lot of money to do some of those things.
Yes,
over in the countries. It's so poor over there, it doesn't take a lot of money at all. So here we have one of the richest people in the world talking about how she's no Mother Teresa. You know, she's going to do her little part, but she said, and it really upsets me. Because especially people of color that come from, the roots come from that. We all of our roots come from Africa. But the thing is, that girl's school, if all of these celebrities put into their own countries, into their own roots, if put into their own place, put some of them billions and trillions of dollars that they've made, then these people, there'd be no poverty in this world. No poverty in the world. But to put in a little bit of money and act like you're doing something real spectacular, And I put, when I was in those countries, I was putting a lot of money in that I didn't even have. But you know what? It's about, if you got money, don't be afraid to spend it where you know there's starvation. You see these little babies on TV with their ribs sticking out because they're starving to death. And then you got these celebrities that are doing so much talking about, "I'm no Mother Teresa." What is all that about? Uh-huh. That's why I say,
That comes down to that. That's all public relations. Oprah doesn't care about anybody but Oprah. And if you actually, Sam, exactly what you said. If either one of us wanted to throw some money, you know, over a period of time to open a school in the Congo, we could do that.
I just don't think
it would stand, because we can't afford the protection.
And even flying things over there, I mean, it cost us. Like I said, I send things over to Africa, but it costs more to send things over. You know, to send a small little package over, it costs over $100 to send it. And who can afford to pay? And then some of them over at the other end have to pay when they receive it. There's no reason
Absolutely.
why any there's no reason why there should be any poverty in this world with all the money. And look at all these rich people who don't want to pay taxes, all these wealthy people that don't want to pay taxes. And you've got all these people that it doesn't make sense.
I wouldn't dive so deep into that because that's starting to sound like communism there. But Elon Musk has paid the highest amount of taxes of any American any American ever. And you have a bunch of people coming out saying that, you know, he's not paying his taxes. Billionaires pay most of the taxes. 100 millionaires and billionaires pay most of the taxes in America. If you have ever gotten a tax refund, it means that you're that somebody else that was worth 10 times more money, 100 times more money than you paid the bill. And, you know, and here's another thing that I think a lot of people don't understand is that if you keep taxing the rich people to the point where they can no longer survive, then it will be impossible. Because all they have to do is leave. All they have to do is go to Malta. All they have to do is go to Switzerland. And there you go. You lose all that tax revenue. And what are they going to do? It's the same thing. I'm from Chicago. So when people leave Illinois and people leave Chicago, all these millionaires leave Chicago, and all they have left is to tax the rest of the people still remaining in Illinois. So we are the highest tax state in the nation. And I have not been to Chicago in years, but I know that I'm paying like 28% of my income to take care of Chicago's nonsense. So you can't I'm just saying it's not a good idea to say that the millionaires and the billionaires aren't paying their fair share. They paid more than either of us several lifetimes over. I'm saying that when it comes down to the brass tacks, the people that are legislating the stuff, the politicians in power who are legislating all of this nonsense that's making everybody miserable, we need to hold them accountable. I don't care how much anybody's worth. That's never been my focus. It's about who's making the rules, because it's the same thing as Monopoly. You ever played Monopoly? Yeah. The banker is the one making the rules the entire game. And if they just so happen to slide a $500 or $100 Monopoly bill into their stash, you know, it's unfair, but they're the banker. So what are you going to say about it? It's the same thing with these politicians. We need to stop them from corrupting the entire game, because if we're going to play peaceful as a society, we need to be on the same moral. I'm not saying moral. We need to be on the same wavelength here. We're all trying to build up and build better lives. That's wonderful. We should all be building each other up and, you know, showing each other new stuff. But Oprah Winfrey, all these other billionaires, I don't even want them to care about other people. I want people who look at them as special people. I want them to make moves to make themselves financially and fiscally able, not necessarily to compete, but make themselves, you know, more responsible in their endeavors. And that's all I can ever ask from anybody. But that's what we have here.
We got a late start this morning. This afternoon. So right now we have 60 seconds left. We have a caller, 208. Do you want to say something real quick? We're going to have to pick this up hopefully next week because some of the topics you're talking about are very interesting. 208, your name? No? Okay, so what we're going to do is we're getting ready to close, 30 seconds left. I want to thank everybody for coming on. Again, we got a late start because no one was calling in earlier, and now the board's lit up. So if we can't pick up on this next week, we're going to be talking next Tuesday about lawyers, though. Again, we want to bring up the problems we've had with people have had with lawyers and being scammed and everything, because there's a lot of people that have been talking about that lately. So hopefully you'll come on next week. We'll talk about that and maybe pick up on some of this that we have to leave on now, because I'm really interested in it. So I want to thank everybody for being on with us. I appreciate every comment that was made, everything that was said. And I hope that you'll join us next Thursday. Tomorrow I will be interviewing from the Netherlands, Marion Jacobs, psychosocial therapist, from 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time to 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I'm sorry, everyone. Thank you for being on, and we are now going to be closing down. Thank you. We're going to end this episode now.